This week in the Famicom Dojo podcast, we're back, talking about an era of gaming that some think is best left forgotten. Early console 3D. We talk about more advanced 3D in future retro, and the games that we should be playing on Pile of Shame, but our kids are playing instead. Hey, who left the Sour Patch Kids wrapper in here? Adam. So, Vink.
Hey.
Interesting episode we had last week.
Yeah, can't wait to hear it.
Now, we're recording this before I think that one was recorded, but that was our April Fool's episode. I hope you enjoyed it. I hope we enjoyed it.
Yeah, I hope we enjoyed it.
We did one too, though.
Yeah, and if you haven't heard the one we did, and you want to, and you're intrigued by human centipedes... please go to the link that will obviously be in our show notes.
Right on. Yeah, it's for No Topic Required, done by our guest hosts last week, Zach Shipley, Adam Gardner, and Sarah Rattle. They do that every week, releases the same day as Famicom Dojo, and we've done stuff together on the Powitcast before, so we've known each other for a long time, minus Sarah. They just brought her on because she's from Wisconsin and is a transplant to other parts of the country. But, yeah, we also got a chance to talk about Back to the Future, the movies, like, a lot, because we always reference them in this show, and now we had a chance to actually discuss it openly, without fear of retribution.
Well, I mean...
Well, there's lots of fear of retribution.
Without fear of retribution from our fans.
Right. We'll see. We'll see how the No Topic Required crew handles it, but,
yeah. So we hope you enjoyed that, or if you didn't, we hope that you will forgive us. So,
oh dear, yeah, I'm sure it's fine.
I know I sound a little strange today.
Oh yeah,
it sounds like I've got like cotton balls or something in my mouth.
It's not too bad actually.
It doesn't sound too bad. I don't know. To me, it sounds really bad. A couple days ago, I was in a bike accident. I'd like for that to sound tough, like you know, me and my hog or something. But no, it was a bicycle with a basket on the front. I was biking down the road and I hit a coffee can, and I just went straight forward and I landed face first on the cement, not before sliding a bit. Yeah, sorry.
You didn't share that detail before. Oh, Jesus.
Cut my lip up pretty bad. Needed 15 stitches. And so my face is all like puffy right now. It should heal back. I don't know. I'll probably have a scar, but if anybody asks me, I'm going to say I got it. It's an old war wound from the console war.
So you're saying that there won't be any new videos for a while?
Well, there could. We could go on the theme. Right now, the only game I feel confident in reviewing with this current face is like something from the House of the Dead series. So,
oh dear.
Yeah, it obviously, if it was really bad, I wouldn't be podcasting right now. But it looks pretty horrific.
I may have seen a picture.
Yeah. Oh, I should point out that here's your bit of culture for the day.
Sure.
Coffee cans, maybe if for our American listeners are thinking, what, a coffee can? Like those giant things that coffee grounds come in?
That's what I was thinking of. And I was thinking, like, do they even have coffee in Japan? Like, I know that they have those little glass or aluminum canned, like, specialty coffees, but...
So basically what they have is it's from a vending machine. It's in a small can. Looks like a soda can, but a little smaller. But the thing is, if it was just an aluminum soda can, my bike wheel would have gone right over it. But a lot of these are steel cans.
Oh, no. Okay.
That's what caused the bump.
What's even more strange to me is how, like, Japan is notorious for the lack of litter. Like, people carry their trash with them.
Yeah, I don't know.
There's no public places to dispose of it either, so they take it home.
And that's probably why I felt like this is the middle of the night, and it was pretty dark. But, you know, I was biking because it was cold. I wanted to get home. So you don't anticipate the litter because it's not usually there. If I was biking through, say, Chicago, you know, I'd adjust for litter. You know,
and gunshots.
And gunshots, yeah. So, yeah, that's super lame, but I'll get on with it.
I'm really sorry that my first reaction to this was again.
Yeah. You know, that might make a good audio bonus. You should include the first time I got hit by a car in Japan. Well, no, the only time I've gotten hit by a car in Japan. My first encounter with the Japanese medical system as a bloody wreck coming into the emergency. So I guess this would be my second time coming in as a bloody wreck to the emergency.
It was about 8 years ago, I want to say.
Yep. Hopefully it'll be another 8 years before my next one.
Oh, yeah. Then your girls will be teenagers, and that's a frightening thought.
Yeah, more frightening than the accident. So anyway, if I sound a little kind of strange, that's why.
Awesome. Well, I think people appreciate, well, I appreciate you being here and alive.
I know. Maybe I shouldn't have, because it's pretty graphic. But, I mean, I sent you a picture of my bloodied up face after this. Actually, if I would have sent you a picture of right after it happened, it's totally House of the Dead. You know, I mean, you know, I was pretty cleaned up by that point. But I sent it to you, and right as I sent it, I went, I'm the fighter who lost in Street Fighter 2.
Right? Oh, God. You know, I mean, I didn't even...
Portraits that come up in the arcade version, the Super Nintendo version too.
Oh my God!
They get increasingly like more bloodied up as they lose.
Yeah,
and have bandages and stuff. I'm like, I am the losing portrait in a Famicom Dojo based fighter.
Wow, way to bring that back to video games. <That's>...
I always bring it back to video. Sean.
Yeah.
Within the first 90 seconds. After this accident happened, okay? Mm. When I was evaluating, I'm like touching around my face. I'm like, okay, no broken teeth. Okay, split lip. Okay. And I'm just like, I wonder if I'm going to be able to podcast on Monday. Really, in my first thoughts, you know, before, like, I wonder how permanent the thing is going to be. You know, it was like, if I have this, like, I also nearly bit through my tongue, so that was really, ooh, really, yeah.
Hence the swelling,
which is a very weird feeling.
Yeah,
and I was just like, "Oh my gosh, am I going to be able to podcast?
You're going to be able to do a lot of things."
Yeah.
Damn.
So, yeah, lame.
How's this for a rough transition then?
Go for it.
You keep mentioning House of the Dead. What did that come out for originally on console?
On console? That'd be Sega Saturn.
Sega Saturn? Okay. I mean, Sega Saturn was from a particular generation of games.
Awesome generation of sad games.
Oh, I suppose. Yeah, there was this fun middle ground between, you know, our wonderful 2D pixel art and proper, like, nice 3D with bump mapping and whatever else in the generation that followed, like, preceded the current one by like two generations, something like that. But in the middle we had the 32/64-bit era of gaming, and it was rough.
Well, yeah, I mean, it was in fact so rough that that's probably one of the reasons I kind of got out of it for a little while there. It was, well, again, I was mainly a proponent of the Saturn that generation, so it wasn't quite as rough.
Right. Yeah, the Saturn couldn't really do 3D so much. They were really geared towards super awesome, high-quality 2D graphics.
Yes.
Which ended up being a problem for them.
I mean, they did do some 3D graphic stuff, and some of their games turned out very good. Panzer Dragoon Saga was very, very nice 3D. I mean, probably PlayStation could have done better, but it was not a terrible game, and it holds up okay-ish these days. The original Panzer Dragoon doesn't hold up quite as well. The shooter. Oh my gosh. Look at the beginning of the Saturn. One of the early titles was like was Virtual Fighter. Virtual Fighter.
Right.
That looks, at the time, I mean, when it came out in the arcades, I remember being really impressed by it.
Oh,
very
yeah.
Much. But by the time it came out on Saturn, it was already a couple of years old. And meanwhile, you had on PlayStation, you had a Battle Arena Toshinden, which is not a good game, but it looks a lot better. Mm-hmm. It looked significantly better. And I remember that was one of the games that was... Now, you look back on that game right now and you think, wow, crappy 3D fighter. But at the time, it was one of the ones that was like selling the PlayStation over the Saturn.
And it's so funny to me, too, because I was definitely still a hardcore Nintendo fanboy when the N64 came out. So I was like, PlayStation. And, of course, I railed at those Crash Bandicoot ads that, like, was in front of Nintendo headquarters, like, screaming obscenities. Well, not really obscenities, but, you know, heckling. I remember those quite well. And I was like, ooh, Crash Bandicoot.
Yeah, I completely ignored the Saturn because I was Nintendo side completely. I got my Saturn at the tail end of the generation. Yeah, I support my money was on the N64 as well.
And
what,
like,
killed no RPGs.
Yeah. Oh, but Quest 64 and that part in Zelda looked kind of like Final Fantasy VII.
Yeah. 64. Meanwhile, like Square or Sony, or I don't know, I was on a lot of mailing lists back then, but someone, I got a video in the mail, a video cassette, showing Final Fantasy VII, and I'm like, oh, I bet on the wrong horse.
Yeah.
But I mean, it wasn't so much even that it looked, you know, that it was Square graphics and stuff like that. It was an RPG, which was the genre I liked the most. And the genre I liked, that I liked second most, was like platform games. And those kind of went away, replaced with the 3D collectathons, you know.
Yeah. Although, I mean, like Mario 64 really sold me on the whole 3D thing. Like that game was designed to be a training manual on how to like think and explore games in 3D. Because just running Mario around in circles in front of the castle, which is something I had to like practice doing at Toys R Us, because it's like I couldn't quite get it right.
Yeah.
But you know, nowadays, no problem. But at the time, it's like, how do I navigate this 3D world?
Oh man, I was floored by that. And you know what, Mario 64 still looks pretty good today.
Does it? I'm really afraid to go back because I remember that third level. I think it's the third level. Like that water level where you just, this is really atmospheric music and you just like jump in right away and there's this enormous like eel thing swimming in the water below you. And it's just so, it was so haunting and like really, I felt like it was emblematic of what this console could do and the power of it. I'm afraid to go back to that because a game I love, like Conker's Bad Fur Day, which has the blocky characters and the frame rate's like 2 per second or something. It's just awful.
I think Mario 64, you can come back to just because the art style saved it.
Okay.
You know?
Okay.
It was the technology. We've moved far, far past with technology, but the art style is still good.
Okay.
That's why like a game like Super Mario 3D World still looks good even compared to, you know, the current gen consoles. You know, the Xbox One and the PlayStation 4. You know, it looks good because it has a really good art style.
Right.
And when you have a game that didn't have as good of an art style, say Conker 3D, that just looks terrible now.
Well, like I have Live and Reloaded, the Xbox remake / upgrade. Like original Xbox, the original Xbox One, if you will. Oh God. Anyway, my point is, a generation later, Rare made this update to the game, which was aware it was an update, which is kind of funny. But I tried to go back to the original, and I just couldn't do it. I couldn't sit through that choppy frame rate. And this is a game that required the memory expansion, you know?
Required, or did it just make it better?
No, it required it. Like the only game I can think of that made it better was Perfect Dark. Like, you couldn't play the single-player game without it. But you could play multiplayer. Or is, sure. Or is that backwards? You could do one, but not the other, as I recall.
Yeah, you can play single-player, but I think the resolution was down. Maybe I'm thinking of a different game. I know there's at least one game where to get the high-res mode, you needed the expansion pack.
Yeah.
Though, like Donkey Kong 64.
That came with it, right? That was a pack-in.
Majora's Mask.
Majora's Mask it used, didn't it?
It required it, I think.
Oh, man.
And I don't know what else. Not a lot, really. Not a lot of games required it.
It's just so funny to me because, like, I fell in love with Grandia 2 on the Dreamcast, so I was really curious to play the original. And I got a Japanese copy, I think, for Saturn.
Okay.
But you know, it's a text heavy game, so that wasn't really doing it for me. And I did eventually find a used copy for PlayStation, and I popped that in, and like there's 3D elements to it, you know. I think it's mostly 2D, but there's like 3D, like the backgrounds are 3D, and there's something weird going on where you can kind of like see the division between the polygons. And like, if there was ever an angle, like the edge would look kind of white, like they wouldn't entirely meet.
Yeah.
It was aliased all to hell. So I could play it, you know, cause it wasn't an integral part of the experience, but it was really noticeable. And I thought that was terrible. And yet, you know, here I am almost 20 years later, looking back at the N64 and thinking that just didn't look as great as I remember it being. But at the time I thought it was amazing.
Well, actually, if you go back to Grandia 2, you'll probably feel that way now, too.
No, don't tell me that.
I don't know, though. Dreamcast, I think Dreamcast Forward, 3D is forgivable.
Okay.
I mean, not even all Dreamcast games looked good, but like they're less jaggy. They've smoothed things out, like N64 games are already a lot easier to go back on and look at than PlayStation or Saturn games, you know.
Right.
And, you know, and the Dreamcast is a step up from that.
Right.
So, for example, I don't know. I played Shenmue recently, a little bit of Shenmue.
I was just thinking of Shenmue. Funny you mentioned it.
And it definitely doesn't look as nice as like a lot of the open world games you see now, but I'd say it holds its own with like Grand Theft Auto.
Okay.
You know, the early ones. It definitely, it has a very nice cinematic quality, which, and like, I don't know. Some of the textures are pretty blurry, and you know, and the aliasing's weird, but in general, It holds up pretty good. I think it holds up pretty good. And a lot of Dreamcast games, just because of their art styles, hold up really well. The original Sonic Adventure looks good.
Right. Yeah, because that's very cartoony.
It's debatable if it's a great game, but I mean, you know.
Right, it looks good.
But some of the games like Blue Stinger and things like that, some of the earliest like survival horror type stuff, looks pretty rough for the Dreamcast.
Well, like Shenmue was just really inconsistent in a lot of ways. I mean, this is a little outside the generation scope we're talking about, but You know, there were things they really paid attention to, and they made it try to look really good. Like, what's the character's name? Ryo?
Yeah, yeah.
He looks great. Like, you know, a lot of the main characters look really good, or at least as I remember them. But the stuff I remember being rough was, like, if you open a drawer and there's, like, non-interactive items, it's probably going to be, like, a low pixel count graphic that's been stretched over a large area.
It's not even 3D.
Right. It's just, like, a flat picture of something, like socks or whatever.
That happens even with newer games. Like,
In
general, I think Xenoblade is one of the best-looking Wii games.
Mm-hmm.
I think it is. But like, you know, you'll go to the market or whatever, and it'll be kind of like a flat pattern on the items and stuff. You know, it's, you know, they've got limitations, and, you know, they focus on what they want to look better and what they want and what's not quite as important, you know. But yeah, I don't know. I think. Well, have you ever seen Sega Saturn version of Shenmue?
No, there was one. I guess there would have been one.
There wasn't, but it started its development as a Sega Saturn title.
You may have shown me that back in the day, like before the game actually came out. I think there might have been some footage floating around that you showed a bunch of us.
Very possible. And I think I saw it originally on the making of Shenmue disc, the What Shenmue disc or Project Berkeley disc. I don't remember, but wow. I know I watched it recently again on a YouTube clip. I'm sure we can find one to link this. But it could have been a lot rougher. I mean,
sure.
And I don't know. I remember that when Final Fantasy VIII came out, I thought it was pretty amazing. Especially like, I don't know, the early parts of the game when you're traveling around with a campus, what's it, Garden. I remember being very, very impressed by that and all that stuff. Especially since Final Fantasy VII had such an incredibly low poly count models.
They didn't have hands. Right? They just had, like, blocks.
Remember when it came out? Now, it came out the same day Dreamcast came out, so that kind of diminished it a little in my mind. Mm-hmm. Yeah, Final Fantasy and Dreamcast launched the same day. 9/9.
Yep.
So I remember... You know, I remember going like, you know, Dreamcast. But I was still very impressed by it, you know, especially the cutscenes, you know.
Mm-hmm.
But I was playing it pretty recently, and I can't believe how low polygon the characters are. It looks so rough. It looks so rough.
But it was thrilling, right? Like, just... Just the promise it held. I'm starting to feel like that era of gaming is really kind of akin to like 8-bit was to 16-bit. Like they had a very limited ability to do anything that looked really, really good. And then they learned everything they had to do and they got more power and then they never looked back.
Yeah. And now they don't even, I don't know. It's like they don't even try to, you know, like, yeah,
no one has nostalgia for this era of gaming. Like this 8-bit nostalgia, but
nostalgia for the early 32-bit. For I don't know, my favorite games from that era are ones that didn't try to wow me with 3D graphics. You know what I mean? Like a lot of my favorite Saturn titles are the 2D stuff, or role playing games that were mostly like top down that did 3D sparingly.
I'm trying to think of good examples that I played because the N64, the whole thing was 3D. So I don't think there were even like any 2D based games until way later in its life, like Pokemon Puzzle League, you know,
Yoshi's Story.
Hmm.
Was it called Yoshi's Story? I think. I mean, but it was 3D, 2D, you know.
Yeah. Like it could do 2D, but that wasn't the point. Like that was like a waste of the console. Essentially,
unfortunate though, because the system had enough power that they could have done a very nice, like, I don't know, Street Fighter 3 port probably, or something like right? that. Maybe Street Fighter 3 came out after that, but you know what I mean.
Yeah. I keep thinking like Zelda, right? I mentioned Ocarina of Time sort of in passing already, but they did a really at the time ingenious thing where like objects that were way off in the distance would be rendered with either fewer polygons or with like a 2D replacement for what it actually looked like, so that you could draw distances that far without taxing the hardware. And that's just called min mapping now. It's just a thing that gets done. Or that's the bit stuff. But like the low to high polygon count thing, that's like a technique that is done in modern gaming all the time now.
Yeah. I don't know. I think it was so hard for me, that transition, because the 16-bit era was so clean.
Right.
Like the 8-bit era, you know, you have to use your imagination. Like, okay, this is a horse. Yeah, I can kind of see what that is.
Right.
And I mean, going even farther back, you know, the like the Atari 2600, you know, you really, is that a dragon or a duck? You know, I mean.
Yeah, is this colored square and the slightly differently colored square, like, are they different?
But then you had the, you know, and I guess in my mind, I didn't see 3D coming. Does that sound weird?
To me it does, because I was a huge fan of shows like Reboot, and that came out in like 92, I think, was the first season. And you know, looking back at that with a lot of the 3D shows and movies that have been made since then, there's like, you know, everything's bright, there's no light sourcing, there aren't any shadows, you know, there's like no collisions to speak of, like things didn't move through things, but the motions were choppy, and it's just hard to watch now. But it was the most amazing thing to me at the time.
I don't know. For me, I knew 3D was going to come eventually, but I thought it would be in the form of like VR helmets.
Oh, for sure. Because I remember going through. I have tried on a VR helmet at, again, in like around 92, 93, I think. There's a picture of me like in the Stoughton Hub. Look it up. I'm like in the public library there and trying on this VR helmet. I remember kind of what the level looked like, and it was very sparsely populated and again, brightly like CGA colors, very, very bright colors. And now we like, you know, play Tomb Raider, right? And tell me that even compares. But there's no helmets involved. Yeah, I totally hear what you're saying.
But I remember, like, I was at the arcade, and, yeah, wow, there's me dating myself. Okay, I was
I was in an arcade.
I saw the original Virtua Racer. Okay.
Okay.
I looked at it, and I'm like, wow, 3D, whoa, where'd that come from? You know? I was really surprised, because to me, video games were kind of a 2D thing, you know?
Right.
And I still thought, and then I looked over, and at the other side of the arcade, they had Outrun. And I'm like, Outrun looks better. <You know? laughs> 3D was pretty ugly. I mean, it existed only really to be 3D, you know?
Right. Yeah, I wasn't a fan of things like Virtual Fighter. I thought it looked terrible. But the N64 stuff, I had just latched onto like no one's business.
But I don't know. For some reason, I think I would have been happier as a gamer if they would have skipped 3D altogether and gone right to like really high resolution, really high frame rate 2D. At the time. No. Now, of course, 3D should right. exist. But like in the 32-bit era, it's amazing if you look at some of the stuff Saturn did with 2D.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
Amazing generation, you know?
But it wasn't the future, and it's like they had every reason to believe it would have been, right? Every reason to believe that, and it just wasn't.
Yeah.
I was a big fan of the switch to 3D. I couldn't wait. Like I knew the name Silicon Graphics from things like Reboot, so I was super stoked that they were even involved in making the N64. And just again playing the games, reading about Nintendo Power and playing the games at Toys R Us. I just could not wait. And, but like looking back on it, it's really hard to think of how I could have survived it, like with the better technology and the better games we have now. I'm pretty sure some of those games are still fun, but it's just so hard for me to look at those graphics now. And it's like, I kind of wish we could have skipped it too, but at the time it just didn't seem that bad. And I'm trying to figure out why that was.
What games from that era were really, really fun?
Well, again, Mario 64, I loved that. GoldenEye, but yeah, that's nothing compared to first-person shooters today.
Yeah, but I think all console-based first-person shooters really benefited from GoldenEye.
Oh, definitely. Definitely, I mean, that's without question.
Really defined how a first-person shooter on a console could work. Because before that, I mean, they were pretty terrible. I mean, if you play like Doom on any console, you know,
right?
It really set up the mold for what first person shooters would be on a console.
Yeah. Oh, that's another sheet. So definitely the PC. Definitely the PC area got ahead of the curve here, and I did play like Wolfenstein, for instance, but that was really basic 3D, right? Like you just moved in four directions and there wasn't any up or down to speak of, and it was neat. And then like Doom added a little bit of up and down, you know, but it was all in this form of moving floors and stuff. You couldn't go up ramps.
I think you had
there weren't
stairs.
Ramps, I promise you. There were stairs, but there were no ramps.
Yeah.
And like, did you ever do like any editing in the Doom or Doom 2 engine?
But I did download map packs that other people had made. Again, I've never been into first-person shooters so much. I mainly played them at the time for the technology.
Okay. Yeah. I did a lot of that stuff. So I made my own custom maps all the time that had these like weird, crazy paths. They're kind of like mazes. You know, it was okay. less about the fighting and the death match and then trying to find secrets. Because I liked finding them in Doom, but I was really upset with, like, there weren't more of them, so I just made levels that were all secrets. but the way you edited things, you'd have this area, like, there was, like, a minimum size you could make of, like, a square, like, that's, like, the ground, right? And you defined the ceiling height and the floor height, and then the textures, if there were any walls, and, like, which of the four sides there would be walls on. Because it was all squares. There weren't really any angles to speak of that I remember. Like, there might have been 45 degrees, but that was about it. Yeah. And so getting like textures to line up was kind of interesting, because it was still kind of made with like a tile set mindset.
Okay.
And so it wasn't really properly 3D yet, but you couldn't have a level above the thing you were on. You had your floor, you had your ceiling, and that was it, you know, for that like section, like all the entire Z dimension of infinity. So you could have things next to each other, or you could have things that seemed like they might have been on top of things if you like warped, you know, but you really couldn't do it. That changed with Quake, I think. I think it may have come before the N64. I don't remember for sure.
Because I think Doom 2 was more of just a pretty much the same engine, maps.
It was. So like that was my first experience with 3D in gaming. And then like, you know, you had Mario 64 where you could have like a bridge over something, and I was like, oh my god, this is amazing.
Yeah.
So
well, it was definitely okay. So Mario 64, I think people realize, and I mean the N64's controller and architecture and everything was kind of designed around that game.
Right, right.
So I mean, obviously that one's going to work, but what else from that era that was 3D that is a timeless classic?
Why can't I think of anything? Star Fox 64.
Yeah, I'll have to say that. And that's one that didn't suffer so much from the generation change as the look of the game to be starships and stuff, you know, and that they were kind of, they were angular ships to begin with. Yeah, that one aged pretty well. a lot of franchises got their start then, such as Silent Hill, what's the American name? Resident Evil. Sorry, I've been in Japan too long. I was thinking, you know, Biohazard. You know, they all got their start there, but so I guess some of it was kind of effective, you know.
Like Mario Kart 64 was a big deal because the original game was Mode 7, so it was like one of the first times there was a sequel. I mean, if you don't count Final Fantasy, right?
Yeah.
It's one of the first times there was like a sequel that like changed the franchise in a certain way, and like the Game Boy versions that came out were like would more harken back to the 2D Mode 7 version, and then the console versions would kind of follow the 3D path, you know, and they've been sort of mixing and matching more lately, but yeah.
Yeah, I think that's right.
I miss the coins. Speed me up. I miss them. But every mobile version I played for the last decade and a half has had them. So,
how do you feel about blue shells?
I don't know.
A lot of people hate blue shells, but since I'm a weak sauce, I love blue shells.
They're kind of BS, but you can get around them, you know, if you stay close to the number two player and like,
yeah.
Although I think by the time it's launched, no matter what position you end up being in after that, you're SOL.
Yeah.
Ah, well, what other games, they got their start there? I don't know. Like, you know, again, like Mario was just another game in a long running franchise.
It killed a lot of franchises that era.
Oh, well, like what?
It killed Bubsy.
Okay. It killed Donkey Kong.
Yeah, for a while, yeah. A lot of franchises like had an installment trying to move to 3D that just absolutely killed the franchise, or at least, stunned it for a long time.
Right. Yeah, I mean, like, there was a reason there was no Metroid game in that generation.
Yeah, totally. What other? Oh! It started the Paper Mario series.
Oh, true. Yeah. Right.
And the reason it was a Paper Mario is because they didn't have enough polys to make full, you know, 3D characters in it.
Yeah, like really, really similar to the 8-bit era, right? They had to be really creative about what they did, and sometimes the creative things were super artistic.
Yeah. So Paper Mario. Yeah. There's one. Although I'd already given up the N64 by that time, so I never played any of the originals. The first one I played was on the Wii. I hear it's not the best. So I bought a copy of Thousand Year Door recently, but I just haven't. Oh, there we go. That's my pile of shame.
All right, we'll get to it. There was going to be an Earthbound 64 for the longest time.
Yes, there was.
Oh, man, that would have been amazing.
Well, it was going to be made for the 64DD. So even if it had been made, since that peripheral was unlikely to come out of Japan, it would have been a mother game that never left Japan. And how could we have? Oh, never mind.
Yeah, I guess because, a lot of the series that got their start are on PlayStation. That's because that's when PlayStation got a start, was in this era. So somehow a console that began ostensibly anyway, because we know what its real history with this era of gaming that became a juggernaut in the industry. That's really important.
Oh, very important. And it got by on its power to do 3D graphics. The Saturn was able to do 3D graphics, but it was more of a 2D powerhouse, but the tide shifted, you know, and that's why the Saturn did better in Japan than it did in America.
Mm.
Because in America, the gamers, we were enamored with this future tech of all 3D and stuff. And Sega was behind. It was hard to program 3D on the system, you know.
Mm.
Well, I mean, among other things.
How about some future retro? I think both of our games are 3D.
Are they? Okay. Well, you want to go first?
Sure. Well, you mentioned Shenmue, and what really gave me a strong Shenmue vibe recently was Gone Home.
Gone Home.
Yeah, it's the story is you're Katie, I forget the name of the family. You've come back home from a backpacking trip to Europe a little early, a little unexpectedly. And you come home to an empty house. The central mystery you're trying to solve is what happened to your sister, your younger sister, who's, I think, like a junior in high school. And your parents are gone too. So you're trying to figure out like where everyone went. And it's like this, you know, it's a stormy night. You can't go anywhere but except for in the house. You know, the lights like to flicker. There are a lot of like tropes of horror games in there. And what's that?
Is it a survival horror game?
Well, I can't see. The more I tell you about it, it does sort of spoil the experience.
Really?
Yeah. Yeah.
All I heard was that for a while Steam was allowing that users could add their own descriptions to games, like, or their own tags or something, to make it easier for people to find.
Uh-huh.
It didn't work out very well because people were adding very inappropriate things.
Oh, I'm sure.
Which happens whenever you allow the unwashed masses to do things.
Well, there was.
Thanks for spoiling, what was it, Flipnote Studio, guys. No, Swapnote, sorry.
Swapnote, yeah.
But anyway.
No, my friend Norm introduced me to this game, you know, me and Phil and other people encouraged me to buy it. One of the things that Phil noted was one of the reviews said that it was Walking Simulator overrated.
Yep, that's exactly it. It had Walking Simulator overrated, pretentious, not a game.
Fair enough, but I mean
that's fair enough. Uh-oh.
It's the mystery that kept me going. There are multiple stories going on. There's a story of what happened to your sister. There's the story of the history of the house itself, which was not the place that your character grew up. So it's as unfamiliar to her as it is to you as the player. You know, it's what happens to your parents. Like, they have their own stories going on, like uncovering what happened. I was really riveted by it, honestly. And when it was over, I was very satisfied. It didn't take a really long time to play. I think I finished it in maybe 5 hours.
Okay.
But I poured through everything that you could do. At least I think so. So, yep, picked that up. Pretty awesome. Liked it a lot. It's made in the Source engine.
Okay.
So I mentioned the Stanley Parable a few episodes ago as one of my future titles.
As another game you wouldn't tell me what it was about because you said I'd spoil it and that I haven't played.
Right. It's very it's very similar. Like, you know, they're both games made in the Source engine. They're both indie titles. They both have that sensibility about them where they're a little genre bending. They're a little conscious of tropes.
Okay.
But like this is a game about a story. Like, the story is the game. And I like games like that a lot.
Okay.
What's another good example? Even though there was action elements to it, Eternal Darkness, you know.
Okay.
That was all like, you were like reading chapters of a book and then you were like kind of acting them out and then you were moving on with the main character. It's not like that here, but you are like traipsing around this house trying to find clues to what happened to people. And every time you find a really significant item, like there's a journal entry from your sister that gets read aloud that you can replay at a later time. I really like it. I just really, really, really like it. And if I can do some kind of video review for it in the near future, I will definitely do that thing. As soon as I can figure out how to capture video from my PC.
Can you die in it?
That's a spoiler. I was going to say it's a spoiler.
All right. Interesting. Intrigued.
It's a spoiler. Okay. I did do a write-up about it for CR, for the Games Rebels play for January, or sorry, for February.
Okay.
So it's only a few weeks old at this point. Well, I guess it's supposed to come out in April, so it might seem like it's a bit back there. But yeah, I played at the end of February. Again, it didn't take me that long. So what's yours? What's your future retro?
My future retro is, I'm not sure if I've only played one title in this series, so I'm not sure if I want to say the series or just the game. But I'm really liking Sonic and Sega All-Stars Racing Transformed.
I have heard good things. surprisingly to me, anyway.
It is. It's very much like Mario Kart.
Sure.
But with a much more Sega bent. So you've got, you know, I'll go with the series because, I mean, I haven't played the first one on Wii, but I played it on my iPhone and it was a lot of fun.
Oh, did I get that for my iPhone? I may have.
I think you probably did. Samba's in it. You know, Shenmue characters are in it. They've got a Panzer Dragoon stage. You know, it's that stuff's fun for me, but it's also a very solid racer.
Okay.
I don't know if I'd say it's as solid as the Mario Kart series because those are really good, you know, but it's up there. It's definitely up there. And kart racers in general are pretty rare these days.
Yeah, even Mario Kart is like turning into a non-kart racer with like the Wii installment. There's like the bikes and now there's the hang gliders. And I'm just like, whatever.
Well, Sonic Racing Transformed is kind of like that too because the word transform comes for these vehicles. So sometimes you're in the air, sometimes you're in the water. They change from like cars to boats to planes.
Okay, well.
It's interesting though, but and it looks like Mario Kart 8 is taking a big note from that.
Right.
Actually.
Right. Okay.
With their transformable vehicles. So instead of being a direct copy of Mario Kart like most kart racers are, this one looks like Mario Kart might actually be copying some of it.
Well, when you make 8 Mario, actually it's probably more than that, right? When you make 8 Mario Kart games, you got to do something new eventually.
Mario Kart 8 looks beautiful, by the way.
Yeah.
If you've seen the videos, if it really have you? No.
It looks all right. I mean, you know, Super Mario 3D World looks good too. Looks aren't everything, as we've been proving this episode.
Yeah. Boo on you if you say it doesn't look good.
it looks good. It looks good. It doesn't look bad.
Watch the trailers in 60 frames per second in high def. Don't just watch the YouTube videos.
Okay. How do you find those then?
Oh, gosh. You know, I saw him linked off NeoGAF. I don't know. Maybe is Vimeo up to 60 frames a second? I don't know. They were linked from a specialty site. But, I think if you watched them on your Wii U gamepad.
Okay.
From Nintendo's own feed, then you can. I don't know. I'll have to check on that.
All right.
But I was very impressed with them. But it's... I don't know if it's going to be considered a classic, but like for Sega fans like I am, and for franchises that it kind of makes me sad though, because it's like, look at all these characters for games that Sega won't make sequels to.
All right. Pile of shame.
Pile of shame. Well, I guess I mentioned Mario and the Thousand Year Door. I guess I've already mentioned that, but, I'm going to go with the Xbox 360.
What, the entire console?
Yeah.
Well, you get one recently, didn't you?
Did I mention that in the podcast? Maybe
I don't
not.
Think so. I think that was just on the Facebook page.
Yep. So I got an Xbox 360.
A Japanese one, as I recall.
One. But, I mean, a lot of the games are not region locked. About half, I'd say. So I got an Xbox 360, and... I finally gave into the dark side, I guess. Oh my. I don't know.
I really like my 360, so I've drunk the Kool-Aid. Yes, so join us. I am the master, you are the apprentice. Blah, blah, blah.
So I finally have all of the last generation consoles now. The Wii, the Xbox 360, and the PlayStation 3.
Right on.
Most of the time. There's very few consoles that over the years I haven't owned. I haven't owned a Pippin. I haven't owned... Oh my god, there's got to be something else.
If you have to get that obscure, I think it's safe to say you're just a huge nerd.
Well, I am. But I mean, I owned an original Xbox. You know, I owned the PlayStation, you know, and the GameCube and the PlayStation 2. You know, I always get around there eventually. You know, but... I'd avoid the 360 for a long time, but I finally bit because it was like $50 with the game.
Which game was that?
Vesper, blah, 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 blah. The Xbox 360 Tales game.
Okay.
Tales of something. Tales of pretension. I don't know. But
So Japanese RPG in Japanese with Japanese words. Got it.
Well, yeah, but I can resell that sucker. But anyway.
Fair enough. I did try to encourage you to get Mass Effect, and we were trying to figure out which copy was region free or not, and it was a little unclear if you can just get Trilogy or if you had to like buy a special edition of the first game. I don't remember.
Yeah, I'm trying to figure that out still, which version to get. And as I said, my experiences with Mass Effect 3 were not wonderful, but part of it was just this growing feeling that I was missing something.
I'd probably just get Trilogy anyway, just because it's cheaper than if you like play the first one and like it and want to get two afterwards.
I'm not going to buy an American 360 if it won't play on my machine. So
right.
I'll have to figure that out.
But like Trilogy definitely does work. It's just that...
Yeah.
You just want to spend a little bit more to get all three games when you own one of them to begin with.
Yeah. But I don't know. I mean, I'm willing to give it another shot, and what do I have for the 360 right now? I've got Dead or Alive 4, which I was able to pick up really cheap, and it's not bad.
That was my first 360 game, by the way.
Really? I've always liked this series. It looked a little rushed.
Yeah.
It's fourth, but I think it was. It was meant to be a launch title. And I'm looking to pick up Blue Dragon. Hey, can you find me a cheap copy of Blue Dragon?
I'll write that down. Find Zink a cheap copy of Blue Dragon.
Region free. So I also want to get Lost Odyssey, which is also region free. So
we should link that that list of region free games in the show notes.
Yeah, I think we should. But I'm looking to pick those up. Alex had... Lost Odyssey, and I watched the first like hour of that game. It looked very interesting, and you know, I'm a big fan of Mistwalker, just based on playing like Xenoblade and stuff. So I want to see some of their earlier titles. And I don't know. I hear the Xbox 360 version of Bayonetta is a lot better with frame rate and stuff than the PlayStation 3. So I'll probably pick that up.
All right, but, on.
I just am not in any rush to, I don't know. It's, I turn it on. I played it for a couple of hours. I made an avatar, which looks nothing like me. How is that? my on the Wii U or on the original Wii or whatever. And everybody who sees that knows exactly that that's me, you know,
right.
Turn on my Wii U. It's the first thing on the screen. And my daughter always goes, "Daddy," you know, and I made ones for, you know, the family as well for, and they're instantly recognizable. But I spent like 45 minutes trying to make that the Xbox avatar look anything like me, and I had no success whatsoever.
Oh, I'm sorry. Yeah, and the avatars thing came like not way later, but you know, definitely later in the 360's life. So they should have been able to get that right.
The paradox of choice. And it's talking about sometimes so many options, it actually is much harder to, you know. Right. So, like, in the Wii one, there's not that many hairstyles, there's not many smiles, there's not many things to choose from. So, you know, you make it very character-y, you know. But the when you try to make a more realistic character, it's much harder to make it actually look like you.
Mm-hmm.
It's like when I was, oh, my gosh, that's one of the reasons I never really got into Fallout much. The new Fallout games,
uh-huh.
Because I'd be making my avatar for so long, trying to get it to look anything like me.
Sure, yeah. I tried that with my Mass Effect character, and I don't know. I get told on YouTube how ridiculous he looks.
I didn't even try to make my Mass Effect character look like me. I just tried to make him look as dumb as possible.
Oh. All right. Well, my pile of shame is once again Minish Cap, and I don't like to repeat myself, but I'm doing it for a very specific reason.
You have to either play Minish Cap before the next podcast or watch the Britney Spears movie Crossroads.
Ah, God. That's a reference to our April Fools. No Topic Required episode.
Oh, it's a reference to that. You just made anybody with any interest in going there not want to know.
Ah, no. All right, so I again still haven't played the game. I made no progress since the last time I discussed it, which I don't know how many episodes ago that was. But my son has been playing it, sort of.
Wait. Your son is like 3.
2.
2.
He just turned 2 last. Yeah. Yeah, my older son, actually. He just turned 2 recently. He found the Game Boy Advance in my pocket. Like, I've been carrying this thing around with me with the intention of playing it. I just have not done it yet. And he got into my coat. It's in my coat pocket. It even fell like in the snow a few weeks ago. And I was like, oh God, no. And wiped it off and it still works fine. But, it's, I prefer him to play around with the Game Boy Advance, than the 3DS because it's less fragile. And I can replace the Game Boy Advance with less headache and a lower cost if I really have to. But I had Zelda in there, and he turned on the game, and just by like clicking A a bunch of times, he was able to get into my first save. And I'm just inside the Minish Village, and he just sits there like swinging the sword, and he started imitating the Link sounds like yeah yeah yeah. You know, it was really cute. I showed him how he can move with like the directional pad, and he did that for a bit. He was just most interested in swinging the sword and making the shield make the ching ching sound. So I'm trying my best to raise a gamer, y'all.
I'm trying not to raise a gamer, but I'm failing. My daughter wanted me to play Mario the other day, so much. But I just got home from work. I was tired. I wanted to eat dinner. You know, which I can't do while I'm playing a video game.
Right.
And she threw like a temper tantrum because I was not currently playing Mario. She wanted Mario going on. And I'm like, really?
You must be so proud.
I did film it.
Of course.
Because I was so amused by that, that would have such a huge reaction. Which makes me a terrible father because my daughter is visibly upset. I do so many things in this show to prove that I'm a terrible father. Here, let me play you a clip.
Oh, God.
Mario!
Want Mario?
Yes! Mario!
Ah! Yeah, so there you go.
She's so articulate now.
I know. Yeah. I want Mario!
This is Nintendo's new ad campaign. That's what this is.
Like, I say what you want about the Wii U, but for my daughter, me not playing the Wii U is about the biggest crime I can have.
All right. I think with that, if everybody wants a terrible parent Vink is, we should end the show. You can find Famicom Dojo on Facebook, Twitter, YouTube, and Instagram. Listen to us on 4colorrebellion.com, Powwats TV, Stitcher Radio, and our free iTunes storefront where you can rate us and leave a review. And please, please do that because every little bit helps.
If you like it.
Only then. If you like
the show. Yeah, just, yeah. That's just
yeah. So. If you want to support the show, We linked it for our last episode, the last one that we did, and then our guests. We still have our podcast DLC link active. If you want to give us a little donation, we didn't get anything from the last one.
No, who's gonna pay for this? I mean,
but if you want to support us, we also have our season one DVD for sale, which we link in the feed for every episode. Hint, hint. It's on the website too, famicomdojo.tv, which you can also go to leave us a comment about the show, which people do. They still do it. I'm always amazed. And in fact, I think that the topic for this episode was the result of either like a YouTube comment or an email we got or something like that. I wish I could remember from who. But yeah, it seemed like a good one. So yeah. Well, thanks everyone for listening. Until next week, the dojo is
or I'm gonna go sleep now. All right, talk to you later.
Famicom Dojo.